welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today on the podcast, I'm going to be playing part number two of my discussion with mental expert David Grumping. So we're going to continue talking about listener questions having to do with mental tennis and talk about a lot of other great topics that we didn't get to in the first segment, which was podcast number 80. Before we get to that, I just wanted to tell you guys about the most recent contest that I'm running here at Essential Tennis. And this time you can win a free Babolat Y112 tennis racket strung with Babolat Natural Gut, which is an awesome value. And I want to thank Babolat for donating that racket to me to give away in this contest. For details, all you have to do is go to EssentialTennis.com and click on the link on the front page to take you to the contest page. It has to do with Facebook. And pretty easy contest. All you have to do is get friends to become a fan of the Essential Tennis Facebook fan page. And there's going to be a random drawing for not only the racket, but also some strings as well. So go check that out. All right, let's get down to business. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. Okay, so there you go, Sally. There's your top five most common mistakes, mental mistakes. And so I'm hoping that the next five items will be a lot more positive, right?
Right.
All right, good.
Great mental habits. And we ready? Here's the first one.
Yeah, let's go.
So the first one is taking the match one point at a time. Now, a lot of people hear this, but we don't actually do it because we don't focus on it, really. It takes, again, that mental muscle to do a lot of mental toughness stuff.
Sure.
To be mentally tough. But it really takes leaving the past points in the past, because that's where they are and you can't change them, and not letting yourself think or indulge in thinking about future points. When you find yourself, you know, at 40-15 and you're serving, when you find yourself thinking that, okay, I just need to serve this one out and then break their serve and I'll have won the set, when you find yourself thinking that, you're actually in trouble. Because your mind is in the future.
Sure.
And it's actually the same thing as choking. You know, you're there and you're serving to close the match. You're thinking about the victory party. Thinking about how you're going to win this set is the same thing. Oh, I only need to win these four more points or something.
And even if those kind of thoughts don't become directly detrimental right away, it's just not constructive or conducive to playing good tennis in the present, is it?
No, not at all. If you're thinking about that, you're not thinking about how you're going to win.
Yeah.
You're thinking about the actual act of winning, which won't get you there.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Right. Next one. Now, the other six that I have are pretty much the opposite, and I'll say a little bit more about how to do them, the opposite of the mental mistakes.
Okay.
It's interesting to know the mental mistakes, but the most useful thing is to know how to not do them. Or how to avoid them, right?
Sure.
So to get, you know, is we touched on this in talking about staying angry, but what you want to do is when you find yourself getting angry, is notice you're angry, and don't get mad about being mad. First off,
that's a vicious cycle, huh?
It really is. You know, you get dumb ball in that, you get mad, and you know you're not supposed to be mad, so you get mad at yourself for being mad. Snowball, right?
God, stop getting mad.
Yeah, exactly. Be mentally tough. You hit yourself with your racket or something.
Right, yeah.
So, also, you know, being angry has a lot. I know in other podcasts we talked about there are nasty benefits to certain things that we do on the court that are not mentally tough. We did talk about this, right?
Yeah, we did. I think you referred to it as juice. Get some
juice. Like eating junk food.
Yeah.
Yeah, the juicy part of a Twinkie. Exactly.
Tastes good, but it's not helping you out.
Exactly. Tastes good for a second, but in the end, it'll make you fat.
Yeah.
being angry has it actually is like eating a Twinkie in the court. So I want everybody, actually, you guys out there, I want you to kind of remind yourself now in the future, when you're mad in the court and you're staying mad, it's the same thing as walking around the court eating a Twinkie.
Think about Twinkies. That should help.
Right. And the thing is, when you get mad, you get to kind of control everybody's attention on the court. You get to control the pace of play, not so much in a smart, planned out, strategic type of way, which I would recommend. But you kind of dominate everybody's attention, depending on how many people are watching. And you get to have like a little tantrum, like a 5-year-old.
Right. Right.
And, it may be, it's also, getting angry is also communication if you did something, if you made an easy mistake. If you get mad, it's letting everybody know that, hey, I'm actually better than this.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
So, it's something that we do commonly. So, we throw our rackets to let everybody know that we're actually better than the double fault we just did.
Wow, this is so awful. I've never done that in my life.
Right.
I'm actually 10 times better than I'm playing right now.
When you go on and on about it, how bad you're playing,
right?
For who you're doing that for. You're doing it for everybody, maybe including yourself, to let everybody know that you're better than this.
So what's the positive mental tendency that we need to take away from this negative stuff?
So, first most important thing is addressing the negative stuff. Once you address it, you know it's there, so you can actually choose that, or you can choose to get your stuff together and go on and play the next point.
Okay.
And focus on, pummeling their weakness or whatever it is that your strategy of the day may be.
So having the presence of mind to understand what's going on and choose the better option.
Yeah.
To being angry. That's the positive here.
Yes, and you have to look at the ugly part of being angry first, so you know it's either that or great footwork.
Mm-hmm.
And once you can see both of them, it's a very easy choice.
Yeah.
But unaddressed, you're just going to be angry, and then you may tell yourself to do something, but it's like your game plan when you're pissed off, which doesn't get you too far.
So basically choosing the positive, or choosing to focus on something that's good rather than feeding yourself with the negative, with the Twinkies.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. First you have to put the Twinkie down so you can put the racket back in your hand.
Yeah, right.
Right.
All right. Good stuff, David.
So we got the next one?
Yeah.
We kind of mentioned pre-match prep and post-match prep going over it, but this is something that's a great mental habit, or a practice, rather, that would really benefit your mental game. So like I said earlier, is getting out all your concerns before a match and getting your mind cleared of all the garbage that may be floating around.
Okay.
And then at the end, looking at what did I do that really worked and what did I do that could really be improved on the next time. And a lot of times, again, it takes giving up being upset about if you lost, and a lot of times it takes putting off your celebration for a few minutes.
Sure.
And it takes also, if you lost, thinking that there's something wrong with you or something wrong with your game that had you lose. But there was just something missing that you didn't do. Not that you did something wrong, right?
Sure, yeah.
So doing that is a great mental habit that'll really contribute to your mental game.
So clearing your head pre-match and kind of inspecting what happened post-match.
Yes. Yeah, without, maybe I should have done this, I could have done that, that doesn't help.
Without blaming yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, the next one we got is choking. And what you want to do is get really, we talked about this a lot in the last podcast, but obviously you want to avoid choking, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, and there aren't many causes of choking, but some of them are, and we get really in depth in podcast 44 about this, but you're either expanding your lead or blowing it.
I remember talking about this, and it was definitely a big impact for myself personally.
Cool.
Go ahead and explain that.
Yeah, a lot of times a big cause of choking is we notice that we're close to winning and we've been playing really well. So we start to think that, okay, I'm almost there. I've almost won. I've been playing really well up to now. I think that I have some kind of momentum or something will have me coast or sail to victory. So you stop working as hard as you had the whole match.
Kind of take your foot off the gas.
Exactly. Because we think it's in the bag, or it's going to be easier. You know, a lot of times if I'm up, say, 4-1, I think that, okay, well, I don't need to win both the rest of the games. I think, okay, well, maybe I'll start to play 50%. Yeah. I'll win one, he'll win one, I'll win one, he'll win one.
Yeah, just hold serve and I'll win, right?
Yeah, but we think that exists, but it really doesn't. We're either on the gas or we're not.
So just maintaining a lead is never good enough mentally.
There's no such thing as maintaining a lead.
All right.
It doesn't, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm three games up. I got two breaks. I can just coast now. You won't coast. You'll choke. You know, and that goes along with thinking you've got a cushion of some sort. There's no such thing as a cushion. You only need six games to win a set.
So mentally tough tennis players are constantly trying to build on their lead. They're never trying to maintain.
Yeah.
You're always trying to win by as much as possible, more and more and more.
Yep, exactly. And you don't give yourself any breaks.
Yeah.
And, you know, also thinking before you've actually won, this is a huge cause of choking. Before you've actually won, when you're there on the court, you're like, you know, I talked about this a few minutes ago, is, oh, I can't wait to win. I'm going to tell everybody who I beat. I'm the first and that person. You're thinking about winning the trophy already.
Sure.
But if you're doing that, you're not thinking about what got you there in the first place and keeping that up. You're thinking about how awesome it's going to be once you won and where you're going to have the victory party.
Yeah. Yeah, so it kind of ties directly into keeping your mind on the process as opposed to the results.
Totally. Yeah, and again, the first thing to do to not choke is to recognize when these things come up. So again, you can recognize them, you see them, and then you have a choice. Oh, wow, this is here. I'm thinking about, you know, the ice cold beer that I'm going to sell, my victory beer. You know, you're thinking about that, or you're thinking about breaking down their backhand more.
Right.
You can't do both.
Yeah.
But you need to choose between one of them, and recognizing when the garbage ones come up, recognizing and choosing not them. Or not choosing them, rather.
So, unfortunately, it sounds like Twinkies and beer are a big root of problems, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Definitely. And also, so the next thing is a really mentally tough habit is to routinely, you know, it depends how rigorous you want to be, is every week, every 2 weeks, every month, however often, before every match, before every tournament, is to go through and make a list and really examine your relationship to winning and losing. Because you may have it handled for a little while, and then it may, you know, get garbagey again.
Sure.
You want to keep it up. You want to keep fit with this kind of thing. So a mental habit, and this is not on the court, and this is before the court, is you want to really have a clean relationship to winning and losing, so you're not playing to not lose.
Yeah, good stuff. So just to recap, the positive mental habits we have so far have to stay in the present, choose the positive thing over the negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was footwork over the Twinkie was the example there.
Yeah.
Clearing your mind pre-match from concerns and post-match, make sure that you know, you think about what happened, be introspective and inspect what just happened. And then one we just had was always need to be thinking about building on your lead, never to just maintain.
Right, yeah.
Good stuff. So how many more do we have here?
One more.
All right.
Also, taking one point at a time.
Okay.
That's, I guess, part of the recap. The next one is to visualize, use positive visualization.
Nice.
But before you serve, think about how you're going to ace the guy, or you're going to kick it out wide, or you're going to top spin up the tee, or however you're going to do it. But to visualize what you want to have happen, it's a great tool, because if you're visualizing, you're not focusing on the victory party or a Twinkie.
Yeah, and can I just share some testimony here?
Sure.
This is, and I want to kind of reiterate something that David and I said a little bit earlier, and that's that these are all things that take intentionality, they take repetition and practice to build up. And this is the example you just gave is actually something I've been experiencing recently. Back in college, there was never any question at all in my head. Let's say stepping up to the line to hit a serve, first serve, second serve, you know, up 4-1 in a set, or you know, down match point or whatever. I had never experienced mental doubt before, or maybe visualizing something negative or negative thoughts, etc. And I got to say, recently, I play doubles once a week with some members where I teach. And recently, I've had some negative visualization start creeping into my head a little bit. And it's surprising to me because I'm like, wow, where is this coming from? I've never thought that before. You know, on like a break point, second serve, you know, just a little thing will kind of slip in there. Oh, don't miss. Oh, crap. You know, don't want to lose the game.
Right.
And it's just kind of funny how over time, as I've started to teach more and compete less, my toughness, my mental muscle has gotten a little bit flabby. And it's just kind of interesting. You would think that once you have it, it's like, oh yeah, that's, you know, always there. It's just kind of part of your personality. But guys, these are things that you guys need to spend time on and do it on purpose. It just doesn't come automatically just because you have the information. And as David said earlier, you can revert back as well. If you're not careful and you don't work hard, it's just like anything else. You can lose it. It sucks.
You eat enough Twinkies, you'll get fat again.
Yeah, that's it. Got to stay disciplined.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's very good.
So that's my testimony.
Awesome.
Hopefully I didn't throw you off track there.
No, we're good. That's all I got for the blitz.
All right, good stuff. So, Sally, there you go. Top 5 mistakes, mental mistakes that players make. And I like how David said that this is not just recreational players. You'll see this really across the entire spectrum of tennis players. And, you know, obviously professional players are probably going to fall for these traps a little bit less than somebody who just started playing. But it's these are things that everybody struggles with.
Yeah.
And good list of top 5 things to do also. Good positive tendencies.
Cool, thank you.
All right, so let's move on to a question from Angie in Oklahoma. She wrote and said, "We always hear about practicing with pressure, but that seems sort of vague." And this is something I've talked about a lot in the podcast. To build the mental muscle, go out and practice in a pressure environment on purpose. She goes on to say, "I would like to hear more ideas of how to incorporate mental toughness in practice. You can't mimic a match, I know that, but just like we work on footwork or topspin or angles or some isolated thing, is there a way to just work on the mental muscle in practice?" What do you think about that, David?
There are ways to work on your mental muscle in practice, but, you know, again, nothing. A lot of times with practice, you don't really need your mental muscle because there's no winning or losing involved a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
The best way in practice I can think of to practice your mental game is to add some stakes to it.
Sure.
You know, but it's always, there's always got to be some competitive aspect to it. So, you know, bet money, or, you know, you have to do something really embarrassing if you lose in this one drill in practice, or if you don't meet, you know, if you don't hit the 10 second serves in a row, then you've got to, you know, there's got to be some consequence.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's really no need for mental game. You know, you need your mental game and your mental toughness when it's hard, not when it's easy. And, you know, again, the best thing to do is to put yourself in competition-type situations and then focus on mental toughness. You know, listen to podcasts, read some articles that we've got up, and focus on doing that stuff and improving that stuff when you put yourself in a competitive situation. That's really the best way. But in terms of practicing, is to put something on the line in a competitive type game during practice.
Yeah, and this, Angie, this can take some creativity. And I'll kind of give my own 2 cents here. And I'll give I'll give 3 examples. First of all, I'd like to talk about Andy Murray real quickly. I follow him on Twitter, and he and his buddies that he travels with and kind of his hitting partners, they're constantly doing ridiculous competitions and making the stakes just ridiculous. For example, they like to play tennis footy, they call it, which is soccer tennis here in the U.S., using just the service boxes, and you have to kick, you know, you can't use your hands. It's like soccer rules, but you have to kick the ball over into the service boxes on the other side. And they'll play, you know, like 3 out of 5 games of this, and the loser has to wear a dress to dinner that night, you know, like at a nice restaurant. Or I've also read that the loser would have to wear bicycle shorts and makeup.
Rough.
And, you know, I'm not suggesting that you guys go out and literally do that, but that would be an example of, you know, a world-class athlete and the type of stuff that they just do for fun. They're constantly sharpening that competitive edge, mm-hmm. And that mental toughness. Things I do in lessons as examples would be, a lot of times when I'm rallying with a student from baseline to baseline, we'll set up cones in the middle of our target areas. Let's say we're rallying cross court forehands. And every time I knock down my student's cone, they've got to do 10 push-ups. Every time they knock down my cone, I've got to do 20. As an example. And so it becomes competitive, but it's also practice at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you better believe we're both really focused because neither of us want to do push-ups. And so we're trying really hard to stay focused on our task and our target. And last example I'll give is to warm up. Myself and my students very typically play a game I call Ultimate Touch, where you put the ball on the center of the net and let it drop off, and you use just the service boxes and play competitive points without volleys. Ball has to bounce. And so we'll play that up to 10, and a lot of times bet, you know, push-ups and et cetera. So anyway, Angie, my point is you've got to be kind of creative with this, and you can make a pressure situation or a competitive situation of just about anything. You just have to kind of use your head a little bit, and like David said, add some kind of stakes to everything you do, and before you know it, it won't be as big a deal anymore to compete. It becomes second nature.
Yeah, that's a good way to drill it.
Nice. Sorry, I kind of answered that for you. Anything else to add to that, David?
No, that's really it. I think we covered it pretty well.
All right, good stuff. Well, Angie, thank you for the question. And I look forward to working with you at the clinic this coming weekend. Let's move on to, we got two more I still want to get in here, David. We've got one from Howard. I think this one will be kind of a shorter answer. And then we have a second question from Sally, which we'll save for last. But Howard's question was, let's see, if you notice that your opponents are in a bad mental state, and then he says in parentheses, moaning after shots, arguing with each other, glaring at each other, throwing their rackets down on the bench with disgust, etc. That's a good list. He asks, what can you do to keep them there? And I love that question. That shows a lot of competitive tenacity. That's great. So what do you think, David?
That's a really good point. And this is something that's really useful in terms of mental game, because this is where you can start to use your mental game as a weapon to win. Now, what it takes to keep them there first is to not give any sympathy, pity towards them.
Yeah.
Really, because sometimes we're like, oh man, they're upset. That's not good.
Right.
Especially if they're our friend or something like that, even.
I see that all the time in club tennis. Let's say ladies doubles are up like 4-0, and they think, oh man, I don't want to make them feel bad and beat them 6-0, and then all of a sudden they're playing a tiebreaker.
Yeah, I know. Get over it. There's no space for being nice on a tennis court. in the short, more blunt answer for it. Okay.
Sure.
So that's the first thing. Also, you have to really be, when they're doing that, you have to kind of get onto yourself as to how you're reacting to what they're doing.
Okay.
And there are all kinds of different ways to react. You know, you could be like, oh wow, they're upset, I'm going to keep playing. Or you could be like, all right, well, I'm going to ride them even harder now. So what the way to keep them there is to, don't play down to them. Don't think, okay, well, they're upset, this is an opportunity for a break, for me to take a break. that'll let them get back in the game. What you want to do is you want to actually, if you, you know, you want to look, you want to increase the intensity and you want to increase how hard you're riding them and how, you know, how hard you're kicking their butt.
So this kind of goes back to always thinking about building your lead as opposed to just maintaining.
Yes. And you don't want to think, oh, this is going to be easy to win now, or this is going to be easy to keep them down. It won't, because they're going to try and get back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to keep on, you want to, see, this is, it's actually a really key point. When this happens, when you see they're down, you really want to make sure that you stay up. That's the key to keeping them down. And
okay.
if they do get themselves back together, you want to keep yourself together also.
Yeah, it can be kind of easy to get sucked into the negative vibes and kind of be annoyed and say,
yep.
Oh man, look at how terrible these guys are acting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is embarrassing.
What and a jerk, worst record etiquette.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you want to not let yourself get sucked up into that. But you instead, you want to focus on, you know, if their level of play is now at a 3 and yours at a 7, you want to put yours up to an 11 now.
Gotcha.
Make sure they stay down. You want to You want to kick them when they're down.
Sure.
That's okay to do in tennis, guys. if you watch, Andre Agassi was great at this. He was really, really good at when they get down, he would finish the match.
Nadal is good at this as well.
Yeah.
He's really, really focused. Somebody who's not particularly good at this, I think, is Federer. I think Federer will kind of tend to play kind of just good enough to stay ahead a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll get to 5-5. This was really true like a year or two ago, I think. He would play somebody close and then just kind of pick his moment and be like, all right, I think I'm going to break you now.
Yeah.
And then win the set. At least it definitely seemed that way for a while from him.
Right. Yeah, you want to when they're getting down, you want to get your level play actually up. You want your level of play to be independent of their level of play. If they're going down, you don't want to go down too. You want to go up regardless.
Sure.
But especially if they're down, that's a great opportunity to really finish them off. And the key to it is keeping yourself there, playing mentally tough. And you need to be really strict and really rigorous with yourself about keeping there. That's key.
All right, good stuff. Anything else to add to that before we go to our last question?
That's about it.
All right, so last question here from Sally. And she started off by saying, also last night, a coach and I were talking about some interesting advice he gave his son. His son plays high school tennis, and his dad told him, if you make a great shot, a clean winner, or an ace, think to yourself that it doesn't count until you win the next point. In other words, if you serve an ace and then double fault on your next service point, then it's like the ace didn't even count. It's a focused tactic to help the player get over that glorious clean winner that they just made and focus on the next point and win it too, or else the first winner doesn't really count. What are your comments on that, David?
That's a good point. A lot of times in our minds, when we think if we hit a winner, if we hit an ace, that's much better than winning by them double faulting or, you know, causing them to hit a forced error.
Sure.
It's all a point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point.
We just, you know, just the celebration, the significance we add to the way we won the point. And, you know, I would say even to take it to another level is to, regardless of how you just won the point or even how you just lost the point, is to not really let yourself get engaged and celebrating or kicking yourself at all until you shake hands.
It's kind of the beer syndrome again, huh?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. You don't want to start eating the Twinkie, you know, an hour after or 5 minutes. You're still eating a Twinkie.
Right.
You know, and you can celebrate for a little while, but I would strongly suggest you stop celebrating promptly toward, you know, by the time the next point starts.
Sure.
And, you know, again, it's celebrating something that doesn't actually get you any closer to winning on its own. I mean, it's good to get yourself pumped up and all of that, but I would say to save any celebration for the end of the match, you know, once you're done.
And that can be tough to do.
Yeah.
And this is, gosh, Mental tennis is so tough because on one hand we have, you know, hitting a poor shot, which we talked about earlier, and getting angry and staying angry. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we have hitting an incredible shot, but we don't really want to celebrate and dwell too long on how awesome we are either.
Exactly.
It's tough.
Whether they're different sides of the same hand and dwelling in how bad you just did or how well you just did.
Yeah, sure.
Either way, you know, either one is not going to have you win the next point, most likely.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, so either way, it's like eating a Twinkie. It's really dangerous out there.
All comes back to the Twinkies.
Yeah.
Nice. Anything else to add to that, David, before we wrap up?
Yeah, and just remember that whether you won by hitting a 200-mile-an-hour serve down the line or you won by, you know, hitting it to them a couple times and just dumped a volley, it's still a point.
Yeah, so it's the same net gain either way.
Yeah, and don't let yourself get sucked into how you won or lost the point. Just go and play to the next one.
Yeah, my buddy Jason Cole would agree with that. It's all about winning. I mean, that's really why you guys go out there to compete. And be careful with that because David and I have talked a lot about not putting too much emotional or mental emphasis on having to win and thinking that it's going to determine whether or not you're a good person.
Right.
But on the other hand, when you guys go out there to compete, it should be, you know, the things you focus on in terms of your what you're doing with your strategy and the actual process, I mean, the end result should always be to win. So it's kind of a tough balance, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's why the mental part of the game is there's always something to work on. It's always a long path to mastery, just like your strokes.
Yeah. Well, David, it's been great talking to you, and we just had almost an hour-long conversation there.
Woo!
And I can't believe we thought we were going to fit all that in 30 minutes.
I thought it was going to be 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm worried.
Well, nice job. Good talking to you. Great topics. Thank you. So we had Howard, Angie, Sally, Gretchen, Ayush, and Amadeus. Thank you to all of you guys who submitted your great questions for us to talk about. And I'm sure I'll have you back on the show again in the near future, David, to continue talking about this stuff because it's difficult, it's complicated, and yet the fixes always seem so simple. And this is why people always bring these topics up because it's stuff that everybody wants to get better at, but there's not all that much great information out there as it pertains to tennis. So thanks very much for being here, David.
Hey, thank you. My pleasure.
All right. That brings this episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 81, to a close. Thank you very much for joining myself and David for our mental tennis discussion. And hopefully the last two episodes have been helpful for you. You can always let me know if you have any questions about any of the shows or anything that I haven't covered yet on the podcast by sending me an email at ian@essentialtennis.com. To wrap up today's show, I'd like to send out a special thank you to 12 listeners of the Essential Tennis Podcast. They are Angie, Bibi, Alfredo, Rita, Eric, Brian, Renata, Dana, Steve, Charles, Shelley, and Gary. Those 12 just joined me this past weekend for the first Essential Tennis Clinic, which was held in Baltimore, Maryland. And they traveled from all over the country, all over the U.S. Charles is the only one who lives in Maryland, here in the same state that I do. Everybody else traveled from as far away as New Mexico, also Oklahoma, North Carolina, Pennsylvania. So just the dedication that these guys showed to come out and work with me on their tennis games was really an encouragement to me, and I enjoyed working with all of you guys a great deal. And the weekend consisted of lots of drilling, working on stroke play and technique, also strategy in both singles and doubles. And we finished things up with a little Essential Tennis tournament as well, which I'd like to congratulate Eric on finishing the singles tournament as champion of the first Essential Tennis Clinic. And unfortunately, we didn't get to finish out the doubles because of time constraints at the club where we held the event. But thank you very much, everybody who came out, and I had a great time, and I'm looking forward to the next clinic. I'll have information up about the next couple clinics sometime soon on the website. All right, that does it for today's show. Take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.